Who will be the running back in this 2023 class? The latest on quarterback, five-star Nico Iamaleala, and football road trips. That's and a whole lot more in this mailbag edition of Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good Tuesday, everybody, and welcome back into it. This is your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast, Locked On Vols, and I am your host, Eric Kane. Thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen, your first watch each and every day, and this episode is brought to you by BetOnline.net. Well, this BetOnline has got you covered this season with more props and odds and lines than ever before. BetOnline, it is where the game starts. You can find this podcast on social media at underscore Kaner and at Locked On Vols each and every day. And guys, this is a mailbag edition of the show. So we've got football content, we've got recruiting content, we've got baseball questions, and a couple more things. So we'll spend the first two segments going over some of your questions and your comments for the mailbag show. And then I'm starting a new series here in the summer, in the slower months. Starter Spotlights is what I'm calling them. I'm going to go through all the perspective or the probable starters. There we go. The probable starters for Tennessee's offense and Tennessee's defense. And of course, we'll talk some position battles in there over the course of this. But with us continuing to go 5 days a week throughout the summer months, I thought we'd get into some player spotlights, some starter spotlights. And today's starter spotlight is going to be Cedric Tillman. So that's coming up later in the show. But let's go ahead and dive down into it. And of course, I am Eric Kane, your host. If you're new to the show, a little bit about me. I do radio at 99.1 The Sports Animal in Knoxville, Tennessee. Also write for the rival site that covers the University of Tennessee. That is VolQuest.com. So we'll go ahead and get into it. And our first one's going to be from Kay Wayne, and Kay Wayne's a frequent contributor here to the Mailbag Show's Twitter Tuesdays. And his question is, if you had to guess right now, do you think Carnell Tate will be a commit for the University of Tennessee? I think it's going to be Tennessee and Ohio State. And I know LSU was in there for a little bit, and they're still in the picture. I know Notre Dame was once upon a time in there. But I think when it's all said and done, it'll be a Tennessee-Ohio State battle. I think those are the two teams in play here. And as of right now, I will say that I believe Carnell Tate will be a part of this class. But as you guys know, recruiting, it will always change. And Carnell Tate's going to make a decision here in the next few weeks. Even if he commits to one of those schools, the other one's going to be coming up until the early signing period. So you know how recruiting works, so we'll see what happens. But as of today, I'll say that he's a Tennessee lean, but that is always subject to change. He goes on, and can you talk a little bit about the running backs Tennessee's in on, who they might land? All right, so in terms of running backs right now for Tennessee, I think it starts with Jeremiah Cobb. Jeremiah Cobb's a guy that Tennessee values and Tennessee's had on campus and Tennessee will have back on campus. It starts with Jeremiah Cobb. Cam Seldon is a prospect that Tennessee wants. He's kind of a toy. He can play wide receiver. He can play running back, and he is a man. He's a track star. He's about 6 foot, so I want to say 220 pounds. He can absolutely fly. He's a guy that, again, he can play wide receiver and running back, so if you only get one other running back in the class, but you do have Cam Seldon, I think that helps an awful lot because, again, the versatility there. You also have, outside of Cobb and Cam Seldon, Will Stallings, big, a bulky guy that came and camped here at Tennessee a couple of weeks ago and really impressed the Volunteers, picked up an offer, and so I think he could maybe be a part of this class. And then you have Deshaun Bishop, the local product from Carnes High School. Deshaun Bishop is slow playing it. Deshaun Bishop and Tennessee continue to talk. He was on campus a couple weeks ago for the Rocky Tapapalooza, and I think that went well. So those are the running back names that are kind of in this class as of right now. All right, we'll go ahead and move on down to Steve. And Steve wants to know, how do you think the conversation goes after the cooling off period between Vitello and Tony White, especially regarding Frank Anderson? Vitello is an awesome coach, but he cannot have his pitching coach ousted just bursting out of the dugout like that. I believe White will tell him to tone it down a little bit. Your thoughts? I don't even think that Danny White will have to say anything, right? I mean, Tony Vitello knows that he needs his pitching coach, and it proved to be very costly not to have his pitching coach in the final loss of the season to Notre Dame on Sunday. So Frank Anderson knows he can't be ejected. Tony knows that Frank Anderson can't be ejected. Frank Anderson's a pro. He's been here, he's been here every step of the way with Tony Vitello, but I mean, he's been doing this for 30 years. So I'm not trying to say that two ejections in one season is nothing to ignore, or something to ignore, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not like he gets tossed out all the time. But to answer your question, I don't believe that Danny White will have to say anything to Tony Vitello in regards to Frank Anderson. I love this season. The best college baseball was right here in our own backyard. Go Vols. Steve, I appreciate you chiming in. Also, I think Danny White's going to be thrilled with how Tennessee baseball, you know, went this year with Tony Vitello. Almost wire to wire at number one. I understand you failed to reach Omaha, but all things considered, Tennessee baseball is in an amazing spot right now. We'll go on to Steven. Steven chimes in and says, looking at the this baseball season was crazy. Looking at all the history and records the team broke, I don't think disappointment is the word I would use in 5 to 10 years. That's the word that I used yesterday whenever I was talking about how we would remember this team. And again, like, I understand, you know, calling this team a disappointment. It's like I'm trying to say that this team wasn't good and this team underachieved. Underachieved in the sense of a championship, sure. Underachieved in the sense of getting back to Omaha, obviously, because it didn't. But by no means, I hope, I'm not saying, Steven, this is how you took it, but I hope everybody listening and watching on yesterday's show didn't think that I was saying this team sucked, because quite frankly, this team did not. You guys know that. But Steven goes on to say, the word I would use would be wild. What they did this year was truly that. While it was disappointing that they didn't get a national championship, the season ended the way it did. It was a very successful season. Wild would be a very good word, with the fur coats, the daddy hats, the home runs, the team ERA, you know, just the bad boy mentality that this Tennessee team had. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's 57-9, right? That was the record. I mean, that's incredible. So wild would be a good, you know, word to sum it up there. And that's from Steven. Steven, I do appreciate that. We'll go on now to Brian. Brian wants to know, let's see here. He says, this was actually on Sunday. Today sucked, but I've never watched a college baseball game before this year, and it sure was a fun ride. It'd be hard to repeat these characters. The NCAA needed this team for the sport. Yeah, baseball's kind of trending that way. You look at Major League Baseball, and you know the phrase is, the mantra is, let the kids play. You're seeing it with Juan Soto and the Nationals, Ronald Acuna Jr. and the Braves, Fernando Tatis and the Padres, and so many other young talents across the league. And so, you know, it was good to see this, you know, for college baseball, because, you know, college baseball in the grand scheme of things, it's not as popular as obviously baseball, or excuse me, as basketball and obviously as football, but it's getting some excitement. And, you know, people like you who jumped on the bandwagon and started rooting on this team, you know, was rooting on a fun, exciting, thrilling team that went out there with a chip on its shoulder every day. So I thought that was pretty neat as well. We'll move on to Ross. He sent me this a couple of days ago. We get Texas and Texas A&M back in the new alignment for the SEC in a couple of years, but what happens to Bedlam? Well, I guess Bedlam's going to go to die, right? Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, one of the better rivalry games in college football. Again, it'll have to be determined on 8-game schedule, 9-game schedule, you know, scheduling Power 5 teams. I don't even know if that could be an annual thing for Oklahoma if it was an 8-game schedule, or 9-game schedule if they wanted to schedule another Power 5. But, you know, potentially you could see that game on the schedule, big non-conference games, if you will. But unfortunately, with the realignment and with obviously Oklahoma and Texas leaving the Big 12 and coming to the SEC, you know, that's going to be a game that will likely not be on the schedule anymore. And that kind of stinks for college football, but that's the price you pay when you want to move from conference to conference. How is Vitello doing with recruiting to stay at the top of the NCAA baseball? I'll touch on recruiting here in just a little bit. I've got a couple others that have asked about NCAA recruiting or Tennessee baseball recruiting as well. And then finally, we'll get to one more here before we take a short breather. And we'll go to Blake. Blake chimes in on Twitter. If you pull Burns for Beam in the sixth inning, Tennessee wins, and I firmly believe that. He said, then again, I don't understand why you threw Ben Joyce in the first game. If you had him to finish off Notre Dame yesterday, then I think things may have ended differently as well. Yeah, who's to tell? It's easy to go look back. I mean, I don't, you know, I sat here and didn't pound my chest or anything, but I said I would have gotten Burns. I would have had two guys hot and ready to come into the game, and I would have gotten Burns after that double. Easy for me to say that, you know, 2 days later, looking back at Sunday. Beam, you know, Tennessee is not in position this year. Tennessee is not contending for a spot in Omaha, hosting regionals, hosting super regionals, without the play of Drew Beam this year. Simply put, Drew Beam was magnificent. He was a freshman of the year in the SEC. He was a freshman All-American. Having said that, I would not have pitched Drew Beam on Sunday. He simply ran out of gas towards the end of the season. And that's, I've been talking about it all year long on the Diamond Balls podcast with Ben McKee. he hadn't pitched in 2 years. You know, COVID year had Tommy John as well. And, you know, this year was the first year he's pitched in quite some time. And so he simply ran out of gas. So I would agree to disagree with Blake there. I would not have gone Beam in the sixth inning, but he certainly was an option. And that's what's so frustrating. And so I guess where the hurt maybe will come from, because there were so many options in that bullpen that Tennessee could have relied on. But you were playing with house money after the fourth and fifth inning with Chase Burns, in my opinion, because, again, that's all you expected to get from him in game three. And he hadn't thrown, you know, nearing 80 pitches in like over a month. And so he was cruising. And for him to come back out for the seventh, I totally agree with. But like I said yesterday, you got to have a guy ready to come in. So anyway, Blake, appreciate you, man. Blake, a former teammate of mine back in the Little League baseball days over there in Jeff County. So a good dude there. We got plenty more to get back into. We got more on football recruiting, a little bit of baseball recruiting, a nice little football road trip question. So that's coming up here as we continue on with Locked On Vols. But guys, I want to remind you about Bet Online. It's your number one place, your number one source for all your sports betting stats and information. Find all the latest sports developments, news, odds, including this year's basketball championship matchup, the NHL hockey finals, Major League Baseball, and of course the fighting news from MMA and UFC all the way to boxing. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, reality television, and more. Yeah, you can bet on, you can gamble on reality television just like you can gamble on live sporting events. Head on over to the website today or use your mobile device to learn about all the latest trends and all the action. BetOnline.net, it is where the game starts. Welcome back to Love. That's what I call Locked On Vols with all my friends. Locked On Vols, your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast each and every single day. And guys, I want to remind you about the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft that starts June 16th with over 50 insiders. Nothing equals the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft. The Locked On NBA Big Board Draft Experts plus the Odyssey Insiders. First pick is June 16th. Search Ultimate NBA Mock Draft and follow now so you don't miss a pick. We're in the midst of our mailbag edition of the show each and every Tuesday. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, Tennessee football, baseball, basketball, recruiting, whatever you got, every single Tuesday, it is when you guys take over the show. And we'll go ahead and continue on with it right now. We'll go to Campy. And Campy wants, or Campy says, my dad, father-in-law, brother-in-law, and myself are starting an RV road trip tradition for one away football game each season. We're going to start with LSU this year. What would be your suggested one trip each season for the next few years? First of all, that sounds awesome. So creating memories, watching football, you'll look back on that. Gosh, I sound like an old man right now. You'll look back on that in 20 years and say, God, that was awesome. So good on you for doing that. That sounds like a whole lot of fun. Unfortunately, for the next few years, right? I mean, it's just, and again, all this can change when the realignment happens and when you start playing more teams, you do away with divisions, you go to an 8 or a 9 game conference schedule in the SEC. That has not been passed yet, but as we've talked about on the show, that could be in the very near future, beginning, you know, maybe as early as 2024 or 2025 if Oklahoma and Texas can get out of the Big 12 a year earlier. But looking ahead right now, first of all, 2022's game, LSU 100%. Go to, you know, LSU. If that game is a night game, that'd be huge, but likely won't be. That would be magnificent. So that is the game to do in 2022, without a doubt. Looking at it, 2023, I mean, you've got, you know, and keep in mind, too, these schedules aren't finalized. A lot of these schedules in the next coming up years, if you search them, they just only have like 11 games or 10 games. So they're missing a couple non-conference games, likely some, you know, some group of fives. But in 2023, Tennessee's on the road at Alabama and at Florida, also at Missouri. You know, you get A&M at home. A&M would be a great one to go to. You're at the road to Kentucky. So, I mean, you know, who wants to go there? I would say it's either, if you haven't been there, it's either at Bryant Denny or at Bill Hill Griffin, right? Go to Alabama or go to Florida would be my suggestion in 2023, you know, against Virginia, the neutral site in Nashville. I wouldn't do that one. You know, why take a road trip to a neutral site game, right? You don't get that experience of the opposing fan base. In 2024, it's really bleak, and it kind of sucks to say. You do host Oklahoma here as of now. That could change, of course, with the Sooners coming to the SEC. You're at Georgia, you're at Mississippi State, you're at South Carolina, and those are literally the only big quote-unquote away games. You're at Vanderbilt at the end of the season. At South Carolina, sure, maybe. That would be the if I'm start bench cutting this from the starting lineup, I would bench South Carolina. I would start Georgia between the hedges, and I would absolutely cut Mississippi State. Ain't nobody wanting to go to Starkville unless it's for a baseball game. So 2024 is a little bleak, but I would say at Georgia if you haven't been in 2024. And then 2025 is kind of the same schedule as of right now, the way it's laid out. And again, all this could change in a couple of years. If you didn't go to Florida in 2023, go to Florida in 2025. Like, so basically split Alabama and Florida between 23 and 25, because that 25 schedule, again, your West Conference opponent's Alabama, and then it's Auburn, but that Auburn game is going to be at Neyland Stadium. So looking ahead, it's kind of stinks, but nonetheless, that's kind of what you got to work with right now. But there's going to be some changes to scheduling. We all know that. So hopefully you'll get some better games in the near future. But Campy, that sounds awesome, man. Appreciate you chiming in. We will go to Tyler. This baseball season was not a failure. They smashed records like crazy. With that in the books, though, what type of returning production or additions do we need to see from them to get back to Omaha next year? Yeah, Tyler, in short, you need pitching. Tennessee had pitching this year, absolutely. And you need that pitching to replicate, to duplicate. You get back the SEC Pitcher of the Year in Chase Dolander. You get back the SEC Freshman of the Year in Drew Beam. You get a Freshman All-American, Chase Burns. That'll be your weekend rotation. You could lose some guys in the bullpen, but continue to produce and, you know, develop guys back there in the back end. I'm sure the transfer portal will be a factor as well. Tennessee needs to continue to pitch well, and I'll talk about this here in just a second, but there'll be some guys that'll leave this lineup. You need to attack the transfer portal well and go and get some guys that can come in and produce right away, and Tennessee will do that. So hold on, we'll get to that here in just a moment as well. We'll move on now to Kurt. For those that didn't really follow the baseball team, compare the loss to Notre Dame to a loss the football team has had to help relate the disappointment. Yeah, that's a good question. It's a little difficult, though, because, again, this was a game, a series, if you will, to where if Tennessee wins, it goes on to the College World Series. So, you know, a couple years ago in 2016 when Tennessee lost to Vanderbilt at the end of the year, and if you just beat Vanderbilt, you were going to the Sugar Bowl. Again, that would be kind of relatable, though the Sugar Bowl is not the College World Series. It's a prestigious bowl game. It used to mean a whole lot more than what it does now if it's not in the college football playoff rotation. But that's somewhat of a comparable comparison there. But really, I would go Ole Miss. But I would make it like, you know, Tennessee lost to Ole Miss this past season. Ole Miss, good quarterback, good coach, good team this year, exciting offense, all that. Very solid team. And Tennessee was right there, and it came up just short. Now, imagine putting Ole Miss at the end of the season for a chance to get into the college football playoff. Losing to Ole Miss, say, in week 12, week 13, and missing out on the chance to go to the college football playoff, that is kind of what I would equate to it. Because Tennessee, you can make the argument that Tennessee was a better team last year against Ole Miss. So that's when I read that question earlier today, that's kind of what I came up with, and I hope that makes sense. But you got to keep in mind, too, this Notre Dame team, good, solid team, good pitching. The lineup was not very impressive until it came to Lindsey Nelson Stadium. I'm going to be completely honest with you about that. And they kept making jokes about the field, making comments about the field being a smaller park. You know, they hit 7 home runs on the weekend. 6 of them were total shots that would have been out anywhere. The one that was kind of a fly ball that just got over the fence and, you know, was aided by Lindsey Nelson Stadium was the one that tied the game on Sunday there in that 7th inning, which is kind of funny. So that's kind of how I'd equate it to. If you guys can help me out and do one better, I'm all ears. But I would say kind of like Tennessee Ole Miss last year, but say Ole Miss was at the end of the season, and if you win that game, you get to go play for an SEC championship or you get to go play for a college football playoff. Losing that game in that situation is kind of how I would equate that. So we will move on here. Got a couple more to get into. We'll go to the Locked On Vols account to those DMs, and this is from Luke. Can we get at least a few seconds of baseball recruiting just so we can get an understanding of our future team? Love the show. Luke, I appreciate it, man. I'm going to be honest with you guys. I do football recruiting. We'll talk a little basketball recruiting. I've never, ever, ever done baseball recruiting, but I can start looking into that a little bit. That's not my role at VolQuest. If they asked me to do it, I certainly would, but that's not really been my role. But I will say this. As far as the transfer portal, I can speak on that. Tennessee has already got the commit of Kansas shortstop Maui Ahuna, which is a stud, and he will play shortstop for the University of Tennessee next year because Cortland Lawson's likely to go into the draft. And Tennessee is hosting officially a catcher-pitcher prospect from Air Force, Paul Skeens. I think is how you say his name. Tennessee is recruiting him as a catcher. Obviously, they need a catcher with Evan Russell, you know, exhausting his eligibility. You do have Charlie Taylor, but they are recruiting him as a catcher. And if he can pitch, he can pitch. That'd be nice. That's a little added on bonus. But those are the two players in the transfer portal. One committed already. The other one on an OV. And then watch out for Tommy Tanks, man. Watch out for Tommy Tanks. Who knows? NC State transfer, you know, likely wanting to stay in the state of Florida, but with Florida State having a change of leadership, maybe that helps Tennessee out in that regard. Tennessee baseball will 100% be a factor in the transfer portal. Remember, Chase Dolander came over via the transfer portal from Georgia Southern, and he is, of course, the SEC Pitcher of the Year. We will move on to... And one more note on that. I've been asked, like, who are some of the guys who are likely to stay? And who are some of the guys on the Tennessee baseball team who are likely to go? So the automatic goes to the draft, if you will. Blake Tidwell, Drew Gilbert, Jordan Beck, Ben Joyce, Trey Lipscomb. Those guys are gone. Evan Russell, of course, has exhausted his eligibility. Guys who I believe right now things can change, but guys who could stay but might go to the draft, I would say Jarrell Ortega as of now, in my opinion, just my opinion, is probably going to be gone. Cortland Lawson's gone and Will Mabry gone. Those who will stay, in my opinion, right now, Seth Stevenson, Candon Sewell, potentially, Mark McLaughlin, Kirby Connell. Those are some guys that I would say will probably stay around for another year, but all that can change. But I just want to kind of give a little bit of a blueprint right there, to a little bit of a roadmap. We got one more final one that we're going to get into here on Twitter Tuesday. And remember, guys, you can chime in on Facebook as well. Search Caner on Air on Facebook and give me in your questions. This is from Eric. Question for you. I saw Nico balled out at the 7-on-7 tournament this past weekend in Las Vegas. Yeah, he surely did. On three had him as the 7-on-7 tournament MVP. Can you make an argument that Nico should be the number one quarterback in the class despite his inexperience? Yeah, I think you can. I mean, it's really just dependent on what you value in a prospect. You know, Nico, he moved up. We use the Rivals ratings here on this show because I work for the network. And Nico went up one spot to the 8th overall prospect in the country. He is the 3rd quarterback prospect. And you got four quarterback prospects in the top 10 overall for the class of 2023. Arch Manning's going to be number 1 overall simply because of his last name. I'm not saying that just because. I mean, he's talented, don't get me wrong. He's very smooth. His mechanics look really, really good. But let's be honest about it. His name carries a whole lot of weight. Malachi Nelson, the USC transfer, is the 2nd quarterback in the class. He's 6'3", 175, good frame on him. He's number 4 overall. Nico Iamaliava comes in, 3rd quarterback in the class, 8th overall in the country, 6'6", 205. You love that frame, absolutely, because he's tall and he can add about 20 to 30 pounds of good weight, and that'll help him hold up in the SEC. But, man, I was watching some of his highlight tapes for this past weekend. He is so fluid. He's so quick twitch. His mechanics are so good. He's tall. So you can absolutely make the case that he could be the number one quarterback in the class, but you know, no one's going to take him over Arch Manning. That's just the way it's going to be. But don't worry, Tennessee fans, you are in a good spot here that you got Nico Iamaliava. Without a doubt, you are in a great spot. All right, that'll do it here for this edition of Twitter Tuesday. Guys, thanks so much. We'll come back and we'll begin our new feature here on the show, a daily feature, Starter Spotlight. We'll start with a first-team All-SEC preseason wide receiver in Cedric Tillman. That's coming up next here to conclude the show. All right, guys, one final segment left here on this Tuesday show. Guys, appreciate it. YouTube, you know, you can watch it there. Make it your first listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Odyssey app, wherever you got it. Please rate, review, subscribe, thumbs up on YouTube, comments, all about those algorithms. Leave me a review, 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That would help me out a whole lot. So really, really do appreciate the guys. Thanks so much for hanging out. This one's going to be short and sweet. We're going to kick off with an obvious duh, and that is Cedric Tillman. Starter spotlights, all right? I haven't decided yet if we're going to go in order. We'll do the wide receivers first, tight ends, offensive line, whatever. But we're going to highlight one player each day from here on out who I believe will be a starter for the University of Tennessee. There will be some positions where I'll highlight a couple of guys in one spot because they could, you know, be a starter. Left tackle is going to be that spot here on offense here in a couple of days, and we'll get to that here in a moment. But Cedric Tillman, your absolute, without a doubt, number one weapon on offense, forward quarterback Hendon Hooker, is Cedric Tillman. Got good size that you like, 6'3", about 220. He's not the fastest, but he's physical. He's Tennessee's, you know, one of Tennessee's taller wide receiver options. And he had a knack for making big plays last year, and he absolutely came out of his shell. I've dropped this stat numerous times, but I'll drop it again, guys. Cedric Tillman, in his first 3 years in the program, he had a combined 8 receptions and for eight receptions for two touchdowns in his first 3 years in the program. Last year, of course, he redshirted that first year in 2018, but he did see the field in one game. But last year, he goes from, again, eight receptions, two touchdowns in 3 years, to 64 receptions and 12 touchdowns and over 1,000 yards receiving. To say that he blossomed in this Josh Heupel scheme would be an understatement. He absolutely was the number one target for Hendon Hooker last year. Out on the outside, Javonte Payton flanked him on the other side, and then Velus Jones is able to work inside and, you know, pick up some ground and move the chains and all that. And Velus Jones as well was a big-time target as well down the field. But Cedric Tillman, it was huge that he said he was going to return to Tennessee, and I think that was the right decision because I think that you can continue to work on his speed, continue to work on him being more of a versatile wide receiver, his route recognition, all that type of stuff, and he can continue to go. So the fact that you have a quarterback and Hendon Hooker back, along with his favorite toy, his best friend, his wide receiver out on the outside, Cedric Tillman, that'll be huge. So what are we expecting from Cedric Tillman this year? So 64 catches, that ranked top 10 in the SEC last year, 1,081 receiving yards, that ranked in the top 10 in the SEC last year, 12 receiving touchdowns, that ranked in the top 10 in the SEC last year. Are we going to duplicate that? Can he do even better than that? We'll have to see. He's going to need some help. One main reason why Cedric Tillman was so good is because, again, you had Velus Jones running routes underneath him, but also because you had Javonte Payton on the other side, that though he only had 18 receptions on the season, he had 6 touchdowns. He was a deep threat every single time he touched the ball, every single time he stepped on the field. And so having that type of threat opposite of Cedric Tillman was absolutely huge. And we get into the conversations about Brew McCoy and some of these other receivers, that's going to be their responsibility. Try to take some pressure, try to take some eyeballs off a big number four on the far sideline. And so we'll have to see exactly what type of production that he gets pinned up with, he gets help with here in the Tennessee offense. But I can absolutely see him having another season where he has over 60 receptions, where he has over 1,000 yards receiving, and where he has 10-plus touchdowns. I thought going into the season last year, because I was at some camp practices and I was watching and everything, and you know, in their 4-minute and their 2-minute and their red zone offense, they always made it a point to get it to him at the goal line. I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. At the time, he was Tennessee's biggest receiver. He's a big body guy that can go up and get the ball, and he can, you know, muscle around some weaker cornerbacks at that spot. And I was like, well, that makes a whole lot of sense. So I thought he would be a weapon in red zone. He'd be a weapon on third downs, kind of a move the chains type of guy. Had no idea what he was going to become when he blossomed into what he was. And then if you guys remember Bowling Green against Bowling Green to kick off the season last year, they kept trying to throw it to him down the field. And I remember sitting up there in the press box, I'm like, why are you trying to do deep shots to the slowest receiver on the field? Why not give it to Jalen Hyatt? Why not give it to Velus Jones? Why in the world are you trying to hit a deep shot to Cedric Tillman down the field? And he was open, and Joe Milton just couldn't connect with him in that game, right? Little did I know that was going to be a big part of the offense from here on out. I don't know what it is. He's physical. He's good at the line of scrimmage. He's great at beating a press coverage. He is not that fast. I would say he runs probably a high 4.6 or maybe low 4.6. But in today's football, that's not a speed demon. That's not slow per se, but that's certainly not a speed demon. So he does a great job with his hands and using his body to just out-muscle those in front of him. So Cedric Tillman is the biggest playmaker for Tennessee in this offense. The question is, who's going to step up and be playmakers alongside him? He was not an all-SEC receiver last year, which he should have been, but he is coming in, according to the media, according to the coaches, and some other – well, the media hadn't done it yet. It's according to the coaches and some other – you know, Athlon, some other publications and whatnot. Not the coaches either. I'm sorry. The coaches have not voted on it either. The media, all that will come in SEC media days. But according to some publications like Athlon, like we mentioned on last week's shows, I mean, Cedric Tillman's getting a whole lot of love coming into the season as a first-team all-SEC type receiver. I think him and Boutte at LSU could be two of the top wide receivers in this entire league. And there's some other good receivers, and there will be some receivers that emerge. Don't get me wrong. That always is like that. But I'm intrigued to see what Cedric Tillman, how much better he can be in year two in the system, just like with Hendon Hooker. We've talked about how much progress can we see from Hendon Hooker in year two. You look at the stat line, it's like, gosh, how can you improve on that? You know, you throw 31 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. You run for 5 scores. You throw for a 67-68% completion percentage. I mean, that's tough to do even better than that. But again, in year two, as Hendon Hooker has a better understanding of the offense, I believe Cedric Tillman will as well. And the big thing here too is, as well, you know, Cody Burns, his wide receiver coach last year, left, but Tennessee didn't bring in a new body. They promoted from within, and Kelsey Pope, who has been here, who has worked with Cedric Tillman, and you're not really just missing a beat whatsoever. So I'm expecting big things from Cedric Tillman, from big number four this year for Tennessee's offense. I think if he has a big year, this offense will have a big year. This quarterback will have a big year. And ultimately, maybe that can lead to some more wins on the column for the University of Tennessee. So, starter spotlight. We kick things off with Cedric Tillman. That was an easy one. I didn't necessarily even have to make many notes. We'll continue on tomorrow. We'll likely go to another wide receiver before we make our way to the backfield and to the quarterback and then to the line of scrimmage before we head on over to defense. Starter spotlight, Cedric Tillman here on Locked On Vols. All right, that's going to do it here for this Tuesday show. Guys, I do appreciate it as always. Thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. Now check out the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast. It gives fans an in-depth look at the biggest prospects, the latest player rankings, and of course, the big boards. Follow Locked On NBA Big Board every single day on the Odyssey app, YouTube, or wherever you find your podcast. Guys, as always, thank you so much for watching this on YouTube, listening to this wherever you find the podcast, and making Locked On Vols your go-to Tennessee Volunteers podcast each and every day. I look forward to getting into some more player spotlights as the starter spotlights as the week goes on. We've got John Garcia, Sports Illustrated, coming up later in the week, and tons of more fun content to get into right here on Locked On Vols. Guys, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, everybody.